headlines. Iran takes the Western countries to task for their double standards in human rights, accusing them of using the issue as a political or as a tool for political purposes. Syria calls on Turkey to stop its hostile behavior and end the deadly airstrikes on its territory. Also coming up, Lebanon's parliament once again fails to elect a successor to former President Michel Aoun as the country is mired in an economic crisis.
Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us.
Iran's representative at the UN Human Rights Council taking the Western countries to task for their double standards on human rights issues and their biased approach toward the situation of women in Iran.
I shall remind this body that those who claim the championship of human rights target the lives of Iranian women and children through imposing or implementing inhumane unilateral sanctions and supporting terroristic activities against them, as reflected in the report of Special Rapporteur of Sanctions. The systematic violence against women and girls in their own countries, refusing to accept the women refugees in their countries, as well as keeping silent on women's situation in Yemen and occupied Palestine, assassination of Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Aghila, and unmarked graves of indigenous children in Canada are just a few examples which discredit their alleged claims for human rights.
Karimi also said that using human rights as a tool for political purposes of specific groups of Western countries is appalling and disgraceful. She particularly criticized Germany for having supplied chemical weapons to the government of Saddam Hussein during the 1980s war with Iran. The special session of the Human Rights Council on the alleged violation of human rights in Iran was held at Germany's initiative. Tehran has repeatedly censured foreign intervention in its affairs. Tehran says reaching an agreement regarding the revival of the 2015 Iran deal is high on the agenda. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian stresses that the Islamic Republic is insisting on its red lines, saying that a deal is quite feasible if Tehran's demands are met. Gisumi Shahmadi has more.
Deal or no deal? While the EU is still reluctant to lay its negotiating cards on the table, at a press conference in the capital, Tehran, Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian stressed that Iran's negotiating team is ready for the next round of talks and is waiting for the bloc's foreign policy chief, Joseph Borrell, to set a date for ministerial-level negotiations.
We have made our stance clear, and in the previous negotiations, we communicated our views regarding the remaining issues. Last week, we announced that we are ready for the next round of talks, and now Mr. Borrell is following up and trying to set a date. Obviously, talk will continue if we make sure that our logical demands are met.
In the words of Hossein Amir Abdollahian, resolving the remaining issues with the IAEA, receiving guarantees on the economic benefits of the deal for Iran, and removing unilateral sanctions are the three key issues that need to be worked out.
The JCPOA revival talks are high on the agenda, and we are adamantly following up on the issue. Of course, this will happen when we make sure that our reasonable demands in line with our national interests are met.
According to the top diplomat, Iran and the U.S. continue to exchange messages. However, American officials take what Amir Abdollahian calls a hypocritical stance while talking to mainstream media by making comments that contradict the messages that they send to Iran.
The International Atomic Energy Agency has always deviated from its technical path and taken a political stance. European and American negotiators had promised that this would not happen again, but they broke their promise yet another time.
These comments come after a recent anti-Iran resolution passed by the IAEA Board of Governors prompted the Islamic Republic to announce that it will begin 60% uranium enrichment in its Fordo nuclear facility.
Over the past couple of years, Iran has demonstrated in practice that it is committed to the JCPOA or the nuclear deal. It has always been the other side that has neglected the agreement. Now, Iran says for these negotiations to reach a final conclusion, it is necessary for the other side to offer some guarantees that it will remain committed to any agreement that is reached. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Syria is strongly critical of Turkey over the recent wave of airstrikes targeting its territory, calling for the deadly operations to be immediately halted.
The current military hostilities are a continuation of Turkey's long-standing hostile behaviors. First, it undermines previous agreements reached between Syria and Turkey, and moreover, it leads to civilian casualties. Neither Syria nor countries in this or any other country will agree with it.
The diplomat said that Syria deems the security of its borders with Turkey as extremely important. However, he said that such security should be obtained through dialogue and cooperation rather than attacks or incursion. He also called Turkey's airstrikes a breach of both international law and Syria's sovereignty. The deputy minister made the remarks during the 19th summit of the Astana peace process, which aims to find a political solution to the crisis in Syria. Turkey started hitting areas in northeastern Syria 2 years ago, but it has intensified the strikes since last week when an explosion in Istanbul killed 6 people. Ankara blames the bombing on Kurdish militant groups based in Iraq and Syria. According to the Turkish defense minister, attacks on 500 targets have already killed over 250 militants. Lebanon's parliament has held a 7th vote to choose a new president, but still to no avail. On Thursday, presidential candidates failed to gain the minimum 86 ballots needed to be elected. The power vacuum could deepen the political crisis in Lebanon, which is already governed by a caretaker cabinet. The country is embroiled with a host of economic and financial issues. There have been delays in electing previous Lebanese presidents. Former President Michel Aoun, whose term ended recently, also took power in 2016 after a 2-year vacancy at the presidential palace. Israel keeps up its settlement expansion despite several UN resolutions labeling the settlements illegal under international law. We discussed the issue on our news review program. Let's have a listen.
News review, where we look deeper into some of the top stories of the day. On this segment of the program, Israel has approved the construction of hundreds of new settler units in the occupied West Bank, defying international outcry over the measure. According to Palestinian media, the regime is to seize 120 hectares of land in Wadi Rahal village, south of the city of Bethlehem. The plan also includes the construction of 7,000 more settler units in Bethlehem in its next phase. Israel's Supreme Court has turned down an appeal by Palestinians to prevent the settlement expansion plan. Thousands of Israeli settlers live in settlements built since 1967 when Israel occupied the West Bank and Al-Quds. All Israeli settlements are considered illegal under international law. The UN has time and again condemned Israel's settlement expansion policy, calling on the regime to stop such activities. Joining us on this edition of the News Review, we have our correspondent, Mona Candy, who's with us from Ramallah. Also, we have international lawyer, Barry Grossman, who's joining us from Bali, Indonesia. Welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mona in Ramallah. Talk to us more about the Israeli increasement of settlement, their plans. Where is this area where land confiscation and settlement construction is to be carried out?
Well, this time the Israeli authorities had approved the plans for new settler units in the illegal settlement of Efrat. It's located 12 kilometers south of Al-Quds. It's in central, the occupied West Bank. The Israelis would be building new units, and this means that the expense would be of illegal confiscation of Palestinian lands south of Beit Lahem. Because at the end of the day, whether it would be expansion of the already their existing settlement or building a new settlement, these settlements are illegal according to the international law. These settlements are built on private Palestinian lands, are built on lands that are supposed to be part of the Palestinian state, and according to all the agreements that were reached previously, these settlements are illegal. According also to the report that was issued by the Palestinian Information Center, the new settlement plan would be the establishment of around 7,000 new settler units, or would be including or would be built as part of a new settlement in Bethlehem.
Barry Grossman, settlements are without a doubt a major part of the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. By further expanding these illegal settlements, does Israel actually declare that it has no commitments whatsoever to a so-called peace deal and to international law altogether?
Well, certainly people could be forgiven for drawing that inference, and it certainly is an inference which I draw and have drawn for a very long time. What the occupation is interested in is a complete capitulation by Palestinians. And if we look at the position taken by the occupation, of course, they have no commitment whatsoever to peace. They haven't even chosen to define what they consider their legitimate borders, because they aspire to taking on still more territory from other neighboring nations, including Jordan and Syria. And Lebanon and others. As for the settlements themselves, there's really no issue that can be legitimately argued. It's almost universally recognized, certainly by everyone except the occupation government, that these settlements are illegal, whether it's because they violate the Fourth Protocol of the Geneva Conventions, or because they violate other international declarations, or because they can be characterized as a war crime under the Rome statutes. It doesn't really matter. Israel's position has always been that they're not bound by the Geneva Conventions, and that while they may, on a de facto basis, make some concession to what is contemplated by the conventions as a matter of law, they do not consider themselves bound by the Geneva Conventions. That position has been soundly rejected over and over and over again by the United Nations General Assembly, by the Security Council, by the International Court of Justice, by the high contracting parties to the Geneva Conventions, and by the Red Cross.
All right, thanks a lot. Damano Candiel joining us from Ramallah. Also thanks to international lawyer Barry Grossman joining us from Bali, Indonesia. With that, it brings us to an end here on this edition of the News Review. But do stay tuned. There's plenty more to come here.
The militia Anwar Ibrahim has been sworn in as prime minister, ending 5 days of unprecedented post-election disarray. Anwar took his oath of office in front of the constitutional monarch, King Al-Sultan Abdullah, who appointed the 75-year-old politician after consulting several lawmakers. Anwar's progressive coalition and its rival Muslim Alliance, led by former Prime Minister Mohiuddin Yassin, failed to win a majority in last weekend's elections. Anwar's appointment could lead to a new phase of friction with Mohiuddin, who challenged him to prove his majority in Parliament. The new Prime Minister faces major challenges, including soaring inflation. Russia denies carrying out any attacks on Kyiv on Wednesday, accusing, quote, foreign and Ukrainian air defense missiles for any damage in the capital city.
I emphasize this especially. Not a single strike was made on targets within the city of Kyiv. Any damage announced by the Kyiv regime was the result of the fall of missiles from foreign and Ukrainian air defense systems located in residential areas of the Ukrainian capital.
At least three people were killed when airstrikes hit Ukraine's capital on Wednesday. Critical energy infrastructure was targeted, and large parts of Ukraine spent the night without power and water supplies. Meanwhile, Ukraine's president blamed Russia for the strikes, addressing an urgent meeting of the UN Security Council. Volodymyr Zelensky claimed Russian forces had fired more than 70 missiles in the previous 24 hours alone. He also urged the Council to take action against the airstrikes, which he said have devastated the infrastructure.
We are awaiting a very firm reaction of the world to today's Russian terror, response of our partners, response of our friends, not just observers, but a reaction from all those who really recognize the UN Charter. We're doing everything possible. Ukraine presented a peace formula. The world heard it, 10 items in order to may empower the Charter of UN and violated by Russian guarantee security for Ukraine, Europe, and all the peoples of this planet suffering from the consequences of the Russian aggression.
Zelensky said the airstrikes have damaged houses, schools, hospitals, and transportation systems. Also speaking at the same session was Russia's envoy, who said it was U.S. air defense missiles supplied to Ukraine that struck homes. He also censured Kyiv and its Western supporters for the threats and ultimatums. EU Home Affairs ministers are set to hold an emergency meeting on Friday to discuss the growing refugee crisis in the 27-nation bloc. This is lawmakers in the European Parliament are critical of the EU's treatment of refugees. Jerome Hughes has more from Brussels.
The recent decision by Italy to close its ports to the Ocean Viking vessel carrying 234 refugees has been slated in the European Parliament. The vessel, operated by a charity, was eventually allowed to dock in France.
How cynical is it that NGOs filling this gap and saving lives are criminalised, whereas the states violating their obligation enjoy impunity?
Asylum applications have increased by 60% in the EU during the past 12 months. That figure is separate from those arriving from Ukraine. In fact, the 27 EU nations are providing maximum support to Ukrainians, while those from other countries are often forced to sleep on the streets.
How dare so many of you define yourself as Christians and repeat that you are defending Christian values when your ideas and your actions are proof of the opposite?
In the Mediterranean alone, 2,000 refugees have drowned so far this year, according to the International Organization for Migration. The message seems to be, if you're not one of the 4 million Ukrainians who have arrived in the EU in recent months, you're not welcome. It's suggested war hawks in the US and NATO don't give a damn about the millions of people who have been displaced through military intervention in countries such as Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, Yemen, and Libya. Apparently, the far right is flourishing in the EU due to the bloc's neglect of refugees.
How did Lega get big? How did the AfD get big? How did Marine Le Pen get big? It's all by capitalizing on the fears of migration.
The ascent of the extreme right in the EU is certainly bad news for asylum seekers, according to analysts.
What this is doing is this is leading to a rise in xenophobia. These refugees, these people who, as I said, are at the lowest possible ebb, are now being subject to abuse and to hate crimes.
EU Home Affairs ministers will hold an emergency meeting on the refugee crisis this Friday. There's a great deal of scepticism that anything will be achieved. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/ParsTodayEN. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/ParsTodayEnglish.
In the limelight.
The charter airline that was hired by the British government to remove asylum seekers to Rwanda has pulled out of the scheme following a wave of public pressure in Britain. We have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us.
We'll be right back.
British newspaper The Guardian has more on this story. A charter airline hired to remove people seeking refuge in the United Kingdom to Rwanda has pulled out of the scheme after pressure from campaigners. A plane operated by Privilege Style first attempted to fly asylum seekers to the East African country in June, but was grounded by an 11th-hour ruling by the European Court of Human Rights. The Mallorca-based carrier had become known as the UK government's airline of the last resort for its willingness to conduct deportation flights that other airlines refused. But after an email campaign by torture survivors and refugee organisations, Privilege Style has said it will no longer operate flights to Rwanda. The development will leave the British government in a fix. Two other charter airlines that previously conducted deportation flights, Titan Airways and Air Tanker, have already ruled themselves out of the scheme. In a letter to the charity Freedom from Torture, which has led the campaign under the hashtag StopTheFlights, Privilege Star said it hereby wishes to communicate the following, that it will not operate flights to Rwanda in the future, that it has never flown to Rwanda since the one flight scheduled for June of 2022, which is the reason for this controversy, was suspended. The United Kingdom signed a £120 million deal with the Rwandan government back in April to outsource the UK's asylum system as it sought to find a solution to a growing number of refugees entering the United Kingdom via small boats in the English Channel. The deal meant people who had arrived in the United Kingdom by irregular means, such as by small boat, could be forced onto a charter plane and flown to the East African country of Rwanda. It was criticised by human rights organisations because of Rwanda's record as an authoritarian state that repeatedly imprisons, tortures and murders alleged political opponents. Privilege Style's statement followed an escalation in public protests against it by campaigners. Last week, activists from Freedom from Torture presented the firm with Worst Airline of the Year award at the carrier's headquarters in Palma, Mallorca, in front of the media. According to the carrier, its VIP customers include several Spanish companies and top Spanish football clubs. Campaigners targeted Privilege Style outside the Real Madrid versus Barcelona football match last week in Madrid, holding banners reading, "Don't fly with Privilege Style while they profit from refugees' pain." No flights have taken off yet to Rwanda because of legal challenges in the High Court. On 14th of June, a Privilege Style Boeing 767 was due to take seven asylum seekers to Kigali in Rwanda from a military airport at Boscombe Down in Wiltshire. The day before, it had taken tourists from Tenerife, Spain, to Dusseldorf in Germany. But the flight, which cost the British taxpayer about £500,000, was cancelled at the last minute following a decision by the European Court of Human Rights. Liz Truss, the outgoing British Prime Minister, had pledged to continue the scheme. Candidates considering running to be Prime Minister, including Rishi Sunak, Penny Mordaunt and Boris Johnson, are expected to support the deportations. The British newspaper The Daily Mail also has details about the same story. An airline hired by the British government to deport migrants from the United Kingdom to Rwanda has pulled out of the scheme following controversy surrounding it and backlash from human rights campaigners. Privilege Style was due to remove people to Rwanda in June for the first time under the government's new immigration policy. But the flight was grounded at the last minute after intervention by the European Court of Human Rights. The Mallorca-based airline had faced calls and public demonstrations urging it to abandon the arrangement, and today confirmed it would not put on any more flights to Rwanda. In a major blow to the British government's policy, the airline has now described the controversy surrounding the episode and pledged to never attempt to fly migrants to Rwanda again. In a statement, the operator said, "It's important for us to clarify that we will never operate the flight to Rwanda since the one scheduled in June of 2022. The reason for this controversy was suspended and never flew. That we don't operate flights to Rwanda in the future." Freedom from Torture, which led the campaign, said it had received a letter from the airline detailing the decision, in which it also asked the charity to now cease actions against our brand. Kolbasia Hasu, who fled torture in Central Africa and now works for the charity, described the news as a victory for people power after activists stood up against the British government's cruel Cash for Humans Rwanda scheme. "With Privilege Style pulling out, the wheels are coming off the British government's dodgy Rwanda deal. Whoever succeeds Liz Truss as Prime Minister should put an end to this inhumane plan once and for all," he added. Last week, activists stood outside Privilege Airlines headquarters in Palma de Mallorca with a banner reading "Worst Airline Award Winner" in both Spanish and English. The withdrawal of the operator, which became known as the government's airline of the last resort, has prompted questions over which airline could be used to operate the government flights should they go ahead. Two other charter airlines that previously conducted deportation flights, Titan Airways and Air Tanker, have already ruled themselves out of the scheme. The Home Office said it does not comment on operational matters, but that the government remained committed to the Rwanda policy. The then Home Secretary Priti Patel announced the £120 million deportation deal back in April in a bid to curb channel crossings by people in small boats. Since then, at least 32,300 have made the journey. The legality of the arrangement has been contested in the courts of law, with ministers and campaigners awaiting a ruling from High Court judges on the case. The first flight in June was halted following an 11th-hour intervention by the European Court of Human Rights. The plans has also faced condemnation from public figures, including the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welsby, who said, "Deporting asylum seekers should shame us as a nation." The outgoing Prime Minister Liz Truss had vowed to stand by the plan, as did Rishi Sunak and other candidates who ran to become Conservative Party leader over the summer. So far this year, more than 37,500 migrants have arrived in the United Kingdom after crossing the Channel, according to government figures. This includes over 4,500 this month alone. But the Ministry of Defence, the MOD, has not recorded any arrivals in the UK since Tuesday amid poor weather conditions at sea. A Home Office spokesperson said, "We remain committed to our world-leading migration partnership with Rwanda, which will see those who come to the United Kingdom through dangerous, illegal and unnecessary routes relocated to Rwanda to rebuild their lives in that country."
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri was salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech
by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
Cultivating an Islamic identity has been our ongoing topic. Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayhi in his Adab al-Salat, again a monumental work by the great Imam, in the opening lectures, opening durus of this book, he talks about a concept that he refers to as Izzati Rububiya Dhillati Ubudiya. That one of the things that we need to train ourselves on to even enter the realm of Salat is the Izzat, the power, the majesty, the respect of Allah's Rububiya and the degradation of my subservience. The dhillati ubudiyya. The faster I get there, the faster I make myself zalil and him aziz. The faster I make myself the abd and him the mawla. The faster I make the one who's marzuq and him the raziq, the marhum, the rahim, or whatever the case may be, the more this salat will what infiltrate into my soul. So he spends a good 3 or 4 chapters now talking about this, because one block when it comes to salat is, yes, people like me go up and down, ruku, sujood, but this mi'raj mu'min doesn't happen. I've been praying for over 20 years. I don't know how many times I've experienced this mi'raj, this ascension that the hadith talks about. All of you, mashallah, the mu'mineen. So I fulfill the salat, it's there on time, it's a checklist, that's great, but ascension... I don't know about all of you, but these things are tough for me to really measure inside of me, which means that I'm doing something wrong. Yes, I'm going through the motions of wudu is following the rules. I have 7 spots on my body in during sujood. I do all of that. I do my best. But this spiritual sense is not there. And he explains why. And follow this discussion, please. I talk to myself up here. He says that ultimately we are the musafirin. He uses sair and suluk up and down their book. The suluk is the path, the salik is you and I, the journeyman. Okay, or the musafir, the traveler. He says a journey individual, a musafir, one who's doing safar, let's say, for example, they have certain alamat, certain signs. Right? You see a boarding pass, you see a passport, you see a suitcase, right? Maybe some different currency. Okay? You could tell this guy is about to go on a plane. Or he's packing his car, let's say, for example. He started his car, for example. He's about to go on a road trip. The car is packed, everything, you know, up and down, blah, blah, blah. There's all these signs. He's about to embark on a journey. There's physical signs. He says, imagine now, Imam Khomeini, imagine walking to somebody's house. And they're sitting there on their couch, no sign of a suitcase, no boarding pass, no passport, nothing. He's in his home clothes. And he says, yeah, I'm on a journey right now. I'm traveling. He's like, well, I'm like, where are you traveling right now? How are you traveling right now? You're sitting there in your room, in your home. How could you be traveling? Picking up the signs of a physical journey are easy enough. Imam Khomeini says we're in a spiritual journey constantly. If that physical journey has alamat and signs, the spiritual one does as well. He says, what are those spiritual ones? He says, we have to leave the home of the self. Follow the example. It's a very beautiful discussion he has. He's an arif, he's a faqih, he's a poet, he's a philosopher. You see all of that in his writing. This is that one book. These are not, you know, these are not his students writing out his durus. He wrote this book by his own hands in Farsi. He says there are signs that we are spiritually on our journey. Every single one of us are on a spiritual journey. We are on this sair, this kind of journey towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Are there signs that I am a musafir? Yes, there are signs. What are those signs? He says, you have to leave your home to be able to travel physically, right? Same idea. He says, you have to leave the home of the self internally to be able to travel towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And he gives a very beautiful example, comparing some fiqhi rulings to what I'm talking about. back in the day, in order for you to be considered to be a musafir, for you now to have your salat to be qasr, and for you not to fast, there were certain signs. Nowadays we have a calculation of miles and kilometers. Back then they had other signs. Okay? One sign was that you would leave your town or city to the point where you couldn't see the walls of the buildings of your town. If you could no longer see the walls of the building of your town, you were far enough, let's say, to be considered to be a musafir. You're no longer muqim in that village. Okay? What else? When you can no longer hear the adhan from the masjid inside of your town, you are now considered to be far enough to be a musafir. Okay? He uses these two fiqhi examples to make his point. He says, the same way that a physical musafir has to now be invisible towards the walls of the town and be deaf towards the adhan of the salat, is the same way the spiritual sense has to be invisible to the walls of his own praise and the adhan of his own ego. The moment that we turn deaf to our own praise, now we've left home. That's beautiful. Because home is where the ego is. Home is where narcissism is. Home is where the ana is. Home is where the me-centric is. And we live in a very me-centric world today. The whole talk about the me generation. It's not just my beautiful youth out there. All of us now have been affected by this me-centric generation. So the moment that you spiritually leave the home, where now the ana is no longer important, now you have your suitcase, now you're traveling, now you are a true musafir towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And when you worship Allah in that journey, then there's talks of mi'raj. But like I said in the discussion on perfection, sometimes that very worship that should lead us to Allah leads us to shaitan. When it becomes for somebody else. In order for all of you and myself to understand the power of being distinct Islamically in this day and age, and that means not just clothing, that means our habits, that means that I will not do this, I won't drink this, even though everyone's doing it, I won't smoke this, everyone's doing it, I won't watch this, it's every hashtag out there. We have to be okay with the fact that if somebody asked me about, let's say, I don't know, the season recap of this show, you can say with confidence, I don't watch that, I'm sorry. Knowing full well, they might look and say, oh, okay, all right. I don't go here. I don't listen to this. I don't wear this. I don't quite believe in this. We have to now get that vocabulary inside of us. And that will make us absolutely distinct. And you're bound to get a moment where the person in front of you rejects you, either through a stare, or they awkwardly stare at you, or they awkwardly walk away, or they become awkward themselves. Like if somebody comes out and begins to shake your hand, and you put your hand in your chest, for 3.2 seconds, oh, awkward. And the person in front now, sometimes they make it even more awkward. They stumble, they fumble, their pen drops, it's okay, relax, calm down, it's okay. Just say hello, that's it. That's it. And the whole interview, the whole talk is, can't look at you, look down. Right? So we have to be okay with that. Because it can't be the fact that everything that is norm in society is accepted by the human being. That can't happen. I'm sorry. Because right now, those things that are normal sometimes in any society, and no longer I'm talking about East and West. I'm not that speaker that sits there and bashes this West and bashes that West. I think a global movement now towards a me-centric life is, like I said, global.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is EnglishRadio@irib.ir.
Rahi Kareem Adi Alim Halim Hakim
شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صل عليه.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Britain's biggest supermarket chain, Tesco, has limited its customers to 3 boxes of eggs as avian flu outbreak hits supplies. Tesco has become the latest grocer to ration eggs due to supply issues. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. British news author The Guardian has more for us. Tesco has become the latest grocer to ration eggs due to supply issues. Customers are now limited to buying 3 boxes of eggs at the checkout because of the dual blows to poultry farmers of rising costs and an avian flu outbreak. Tesco, Britain's biggest supermarket chain, follows Asda and Lidl in setting limits after they restricted purchases last week. At the time, the retailer said it had good availability with no limits, but now a temporary rationing policy has been brought in. Tesco said it is working hard with its suppliers to ensure a good supply of eggs, but has taken the step as a precautionary measure. British farmers have been hit by soaring energy costs in recent months, and the price of wheat has risen because of the conflict in Ukraine. The grain is a key component in chicken feed. They have also warned about the lack of money they get from supermarkets for the sale of eggs. At the same time, Britain's largest ever avian flu outbreak has led the government to tell farmers to keep all poultry and captive birds indoors. There have been 252 cases of the virus since the outbreak began in October of last year, with 118 of them coming since 1st of October this year. Millions of birds have died or been culled in the last year. The government announced on Monday, 21st of November, that a bird flu outbreak had been found at a farm near Barnard Castle in Durham. All birds at the site will be culled, and a 3-kilometre protection zone and a 10-kilometre surveillance zone have been set up. After some supermarket restrictions were announced last week, the Director of Food and Sustainability at the British Retail Consortium, Andrew Opie, said, "While avian flu has disrupted the supply of some egg ranges, retailers are experts at managing supply chains and are working hard to minimise impact on customers." Some stores have introduced temporary limits to the number of boxes of eggs customers can buy to ensure availability for everyone. British newspaper The Express has more for us. Tesco is the latest UK supermarket chain to limit egg buying to only 3 boxes per customer. It comes after Asda and Lidl set similar rations last week. British poultry farmers currently face rising costs for chicken feed and energy, at the same time as being hit by an outbreak of bird flu. It has led to a squeeze on the supply of eggs on supermarket shelves. Tesco said last week that they had good availability with no limits on buying, but was nonetheless working to protect supplies with producers. As a result, it has introduced a temporary rationing policy following Lidl's decision to limit egg boxes to 3 per customer. Similarly, Asda has set a 2-box limit per customer, with other grocers such as Morrisons and Sainsbury's being yet to make any rationing policies. Sainsbury's has said some stores are running low on eggs and supplies have been sourced from Italy. This is despite the fact that they preciously committed to buying eggs only from British suppliers. Morrisons has previously said it was not facing supply issues. Alongside households, farmers too have been hit by rapidly rising energy costs. They have also had to buy more wheat, a key ingredient in chicken feed, which has risen as a result of the war in Ukraine. Both Russia and Ukraine are producing about 30% of the global supply of wheat. But perhaps more frightening for British farmers is the country's largest ever avian influenza outbreak. The outbreak has led to millions of birds being killed in the past 12 months in the United Kingdom. British farmers have said despite the price of dozen eggs having risen by 45 pence in supermarkets since last March, they've only received between 5 pence and 10 pence of that increase and are not being paid a fair price for their eggs. Therese Coffey, the Secretary of State for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, has said in the past that she is not concerned about the overall supply of eggs in Britain. The British newspaper, the Daily Mail, has also covered the same story. Tesco has become the latest major supermarket chain to impose rationing of eggs. Customers are restricted to 3 boxes as bird flu disrupts major supply chains. Last week it was reported that Asda and Lidl had also set limits on eggs for shoppers. The United Kingdom is facing its largest ever bout of bird flu with a highly pathogenic variant. Tesco has joined other supermarkets in limiting the number of boxes of eggs customers can buy as the impact of rising costs and bird flu continue to take their toll. The shopping chain said it had introduced a temporary buying limit of 3 boxes of eggs per customer as a precautionary measure. Earlier this month, Asda and Lidl announced limits on egg purchases at some of their stores. The National Farmers Union, the NFU, has called for an urgent investigation into the egg supply chain disruption. The National Farmers Union said the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs, DEFRA, should look into whether a declaration should be made under the Agriculture Act 2020 to ensure much-needed support for egg producers. The government said the situation is being monitored but insisted the United Kingdom's food supply chain is resilient and that no significant impact is expected. A Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs spokesperson said, We understand the difficulties that rising costs combined with the bird flu outbreak are causing for farmers, and we are working with industry to monitor the egg market. Britain's food supply chain is resilient. There are 38 million laying hens across the country, and we are not expecting any significant impact to the overall supply of eggs. The National Farmers Union, NFU, said a declaration under Section 20 of the Agriculture Act would enable DEFRA to use its statutory powers to provide much-needed support to egg producers whose livelihoods are under threat. The National Farmers Union President, Minette Batters, said it is critical that the government acts now to give egg producers the confidence that they need.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood ghudde saratani Israel mukhalifin.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Current world order will be replaced by a new order where US is isolated, Asia powerful, resistance front expanded. This is the part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with students on Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. This meeting was held on the occasion of National Students' Day and National Day of Fighting Against Global Arrogance, which are commemorated on the 13th of Aban, 4th of November. Well, the America of today is the same America of yesterday. The America of today is the same America of August 19, 1953. It is the same America that helped Saddam Hussein. It is the same America of the past few years, with one or two important differences which we must pay attention to. First of all, the enemy's tactics have become more complex. We need to pay attention to this. The enmities remain the same, but the methods of applying these enmities are different and more complex. It is not easy to untie the knots. You need to pay attention. You need to be alert. Of course, we trust our own children, our own youth, and our own officials.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
We know they are capable of dealing with things that are complicated, but it is complex. That is one difference. Secondly, that day, the 9th of August, and the like, and even until the beginning of the revolution, the US was the dominant power in the world. But that is not how it is today. This is one important difference. Today, the US is not the world's dominant power. Many of the world's political analysts believe that the US is declining. It is gradually melting away. We aren't the ones saying this. Of course, we have the same opinion, but the world's political analysts are also saying it. The signs are evident. The United States' domestic problems are unprecedented in the economic, social, and moral fields, as well as their internal conflicts and the blood-stained divisions inside the country. Another sign is also their miscalculation of the world's affairs. For example, 20 years ago, they attacked Afghanistan. The Taliban were in power at that time.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.